Today is the 9th of January, 2020. We are up to Halacha Day of Perek Yud here, and came across it yesterday when we were doing a Fortune Day. Came across the idea for what to do for Halacha Day, because the beginning, it says, in Pasuk Aleph, you're going to have to make this aron of wood. So Rashi gives his take as to what that wood and aron was, that there was going to have two arons. He's going to have a golden one, he's going to have a wooden one. And that wooden one was in the future, that the wooden aron in the future was going to be used to go out to war. That was going to be the second aron, and Bnei Yisrael was going to constantly have two arons. That seems to be the position of Rashi. The Ramban, however, says, no, this was the first aron that was going to be made, and then only until they made the golden aron. And that was going to be the one single aron. We don't see any evidence that there actually was a second aron going forward. There was a bit of a machlokus in the Yerushalmi that the Ramban quotes, but he says the Chum said that there was only one aron. So what did they do with the aron that Moshe made in this pasuk to house the second luchos until they get destroyed? Until the golden aron was going to be built. So what happens after the golden aron is built? So the Ramban says, what do you mean? You put it in Kaniza. You put it away, you put it in Sheamus. So that's why I wanted to just talk a few halachos about what to do with an aron. Right, so now you have an aron, and now you're done using it. This was so what happens to it? There was down here in the social hall for many years. You remember here? Mm-hmm. So for many years, there was that huge aron in the corner of the social hall. Right? So what was that aron? Where does it come from? It came from Har Zion. When Har Zion moved, I think it came from Har Zion. And Har Zion moved, so they said, you want this? And they said, yeah. I don't know what the circumstances were at the time. Then what do you do with this thing? Right? In theory, it sounds like it would require geniza. It would need to be buried. So, but that was like 20 feet high. Where are you going to go ahead and bury these things? And what about breaking up? So you can just break it apart and then you'll bury it. So, okay, maybe you could. So first of all, is that okay to bury? Is that okay to break it apart, A? And B, it's not even so easy to bury at that point. And what other usages are there for this aron? So that's a question I wanted to discuss. What is the status of an older aron that is no longer being used? And particularly if you have another one that has already gone ahead to replace it. So the answer could just be, well, that's why Hashem created basements, right? It's just going to go down there for a while. But maybe there are some alternatives as to what to do. So there's really two sugyas that are involved with the issue of taking apart an aron. One is that, and this, realize this could have been a, or maybe we could discuss this more in detail in two chapters, but it's based on a pasuk that appears in two chapters from now, but that there is a pasuk that you should go ahead and break the mizbechos. The pasuk tells us in Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Gimel Devarim, es mizbechosam titotzun, that their mizbechos, their altars, you should break. And then it says, lo tasu kein l'Hashem elokeichem, but you should not go ahead and do that to the altars to Hashem. So it sounds like, and the Gemara deduces, that from there we see that there is a prohibition of destroying shuls. Right? They're not allowed to just break shuls, not allowed to just break shuls down, and perhaps that could then be extended to the kalim and the vessels and the other accoutrements that go along with the shul. Now, one is not permitted to break a shul. Now, it could be that there is there's two issues here. One is that pasuk, and B, there is a gezeira. It could be that they're one and the same, but the Gemara also mentions a gezeira that there is a prohibition to tear down a shul until you have already built another one, which becomes kind of complicated if you're going to be building a new one on the site of the old one. But that is the way the halacha, that is the way the Gemara says it. You're not allowed to destroy a shul until you have another one built to replace it. Why would that be? So the Gemara in Megillah tells us because we're afraid that you're going to tear it down and then you're going to be left without a shul because something's going to come up and you think you'll raise the money, but you may not be able to raise the money. The Gemara says, what about if you already have the money and it's already set aside, it's already in an escrow? The Gemara says, no, that's not good enough because it could be that another cause is going to come up. What cause could possibly be as important as that? So the Gemara says, pidyon shvuyin, that all of a sudden you need to go and redeem a captive, so that money, that would allow you to divert that money towards pidyon shul, then you're going to be left without a shul. The Gemara says, well, what about if you bought all the materials? The Gemara shrugs and says, still, we're still concerned. Plus, you'll go and sell the materials in order to get money for Pinyon Shvut. So then the Gemara says, well, okay, well, what about if the shul's already built? You still have the problem that you're going to have to sell it in order to for Pinyon Shvut. The Gemara responds by saying, no, once it's built, you don't have to go ahead and do that. And by the way, that's a general rule, that for the mitzvahs of tzedakah and for the mitzvahs of, well, Pinyon Shvut is sort of a... is an aspect of tzedakah, that for those kinds of requirements, one is not permitted, one is not required to go and sell the place that they live. So the Gemara says, no, that's okay. Once it's built already, we don't have to worry about it.
What about like Philadelphia? There are a lot of synagogues here.
Right.
They're closed.
Right. So what happened? How does that happen? It's a good question. Maybe we'll save that for Parakeet Beis. I don't know. I have a couple of things in mind, but I'm not prepared to put it on tape. So I'll look into it a little bit more. But yes, that's a good question. What if people just leave? Right? People aren't living there anymore. Right? So that's and how to deal with that situation. But today we're dealing with the Aron itself. So what is the? So once it's already broken down, so does the shul itself require geniza, right? So what is the sugya there? So that Gemara in Megillah, which quotes that idea of prohibiting to sell a shul, so one page later, it talks about the difference between what's called tashmishi kedusha versus tashmishi mitzvah. Tashmishi kedusha are things used for kedusha, or to protect kedusha. To glorify Kedusha might be the word, and Tashmishi Mitzvah are things used for the purpose of a mitzvah. So what are the examples of Tashmishi Mitzvah? What are the examples of things that are used for things that qualify as a mitzvah? So the Gemara says, tzitzis, and a lulav, and an esrog, and a shofar. So all of those things are called Tashmishi Mitzvah. All those things are things that are used for the process of a mitzvah, meaning it's not the shofar is not the mitzvah, the blowing of the shofar is the mitzvah. So you're using the shofar for the purpose of a mitzvah, right? What's the example of tashmishi kedusha? So tashmishi kedusha, kedusha itself, we could start with that, is like the sefer Torah or a tefillin, or well, not the tefillin, the parshios of the tefillin or the parshios of the mezuzah, right? Those things, actually, the tefillin themselves in this case might be a tashmishi, it might be kedusha as well. So those things are called kedusha. What about what's Tashmishi Kedusha? Things that are used for the Kedusha. So some examples of that would be, right, the tefillin boxes, right, the batim, probably, mezuzah cases, right, or at least the plastic cases that hold the mezuzahs, the Sefer Torah mantle, the covering of the Sefer Torah. So all those things are called Tashmishi Kedusha. Why is something called Tashmishi Mitzvah? What is the defining feature that distinguishes between Tashmishi Mitzvah versus Tashmishi Kedusha? So the defining feature is the Shem Hashem there, right? Is Hashem's name in there, right? So a shofar does not contain Hashem's name, so therefore it's considered Tashmishi Mitzvah. Some mezuzahs and tefillin and Sefer Torah and things like that, so that all have Hashem's name in it, so therefore that is considered Kedusha, and the things that are protecting it are called Tashmishi Kedusha. What is the difference between the two Alpi Halacha? So the Gemara says, when it comes to Tashmishi Mitzvah, you don't have, once you're not using it for a mitzvah anymore, it no longer has kedusha, and no longer has sanctity, and therefore it could be thrown away. So things like tzitzis and talis and your lulav and esrog and a shofar, so when you're done using them, in theory, they could be thrown into the garbage. Now some recommend that, you should throw in the garbage, you should put in a bag, and you could do some things to perhaps make it a little bit nicer, but technically speaking, one can throw it away, you don't have to worry, it no longer has any sanctity once the mitzvah is done with it. However, Tashmishi Kedusha, that does retain its sanctity, because that was protecting the name of Hashem, as opposed to protecting the name of Hashem, and therefore it retains its sanctity. Rav Salvechik has a famous piece where he discusses that is the distinction also between people, that when you have Jewish people, when they pass away, have to be buried. While non-Jews, there's no obligation of burial for non-Jews. So why is that? Where does the idea come from? So he says, because a Jew is considered Tashmishi Kedusha, while non-Jew is considered Tashmishi Mitzvah. A non-Jew, they might have done many mitzvahs over the course of their lives, may have done many chasadim, many kindnesses for various people, but in their essence, they're an object that was doing mitzvahs. as opposed to, or used for mitzvahs, as opposed to a human, as opposed to a Jew. So we assume that a Jew has a neshama, has a pintel of yid, has a piece of a Kodesh Baruch Hu within them, and therefore a Jew is sort of, is qualified as the Shmishi Kedusha, and therefore burial is required. That's what the Salvagic writes. But then he also, in that same piece, goes on to, not he, but Rav Shechter goes on, I forget what he quotes in the name of the Rav versus what is his own Chiddush, but goes on to say that so anything in a shul, right, is at some level considered to be Tashmishi Kedusha. Right? In some way, right, the essence of a shul then is the Sefer Torah contained within the Aron that's contained within the shul. So therefore there is a Tashmishi Mitzvah, Tashmishi Kedusha aspect to the shul itself. So does that mean that the shul needs to be buried, right? Forget about burying an aron, right? Burying the entire shul. So now we want to, you take it down in order to do repairs. So now we have to go ahead and bury it. So that probably not. There are different levels. That probably not for a few reasons. Number one, he said, by the way, that was the minhag. He quotes here in the Sefer Piskei Tshuvos that there are achronim. He quotes here from the Maharit and the Leif Chaim and Divrei Malkiel that quote this minhag that when they would build a new shul and then you had an old shul, so you would bury it in the ground. Now I'm not sure their shuls are not exactly the same as ours, but they would go ahead and do that. However, the minhag is not to do that. That we don't put them into Geniza. And they have what to rely on. And because even the Tashmishi Mitzvah, so he says, first of all, you could say our shuls were built al Tanai. They were built on condition that the Kedusha was not going to be Chal in that way. But also because the shul it probably isn't Tashmishi Kedusha, but rather what we call Tashmish de Tashmish Kedusha, is surrounding the surrounding of a sanctity. So for example, you have tefillin. So the tefillin is in a case. Now is the name of Hashem entirely within the case? No, because usually when we wrap our tefillin, so the dalid of the tefillin and the yud of the tefillin are outside the case. So say the tefillin bag. The tefillin bag is going to be considered tashmishei kedusha, and therefore has to be treated with respect, and should be put into Seamus if the bag becomes not usable anymore. Okay, what about the plastic that is surrounding the tefillin bag? Right? If you have a tefillin bag and then the tefillin bag is in an additional plastic, does that mean that that's then going to be considered tashmishei kedusha? Do I now have to bury this plastic bag that is containing this? Thanks a lot. Now I got to figure out what the. Right? Do I have to? Or is this plastic bag? That's not true. So first of all, this is only a temporary use, right? First of all, us Wynwood people don't walk around with bags from Acme. Just to be clear, we're giant people, right? Right, but besides that, that's a temporary thing. But what about the plastic on the outside? So that is qualified. That is called tashmish to tashmish. And we normally assume that those kinds of that and the Mishnah Berurah himself, right off the bat, says that that is not considered to be kadosh. The Mishnah Berurah in Kuflin Dalet Sifav, right? She'ein bo kedusha, that says that there's no kedusha with it. And even while it is in use, it probably doesn't have any kedusha to it, which is helpful because if you're in an airport and need to go to the bathroom and you're carrying your tefillin around with you, so what do you do? So one answer is you give it to your wife. But if, let's say, you're traveling by yourself, so you can leave it someplace, that's sometimes asking for trouble. So is it mutter to take your towels and tefillin into the bathroom with you, as long as they're in the bag? So if they're in a double covering, so we assume that that's okay, because it's contained within the Tashmish de Kedusha. Fine. Right. There are some who say, yeah, but still, you know, it shouldn't be if you want to. So in theory, your plastic runs out and now you want the plastic tefillin cover. Right. So that in theory could be thrown into the garbage. That's tashmish to kedusha. But nevertheless, maybe that we should try to be a little bit strict on, as I think that was clearly for that use. There are some who quote that we should at least try to, you know, not totally get rid of it. Fine. Another issue. When it comes to Tashmish Kedusha, and with an Aron Kodesh as well, is that there is a concept in the Gemara called Hazmana Lav Milsa. What does it mean, Hazmana Lav Milsa? So just setting it aside does not make it such. So even though something might have been made in velvet, then what else do people use velvet for today? Fine. There are other uses for velvet. But let's say it was made into a tefillin bag, and you actually embroidered tefillin on it already. So does that make it a tefillin bag? Does that mean that it now is already considered tashmishi kedusha? So the answer is no. Only once it is used for that is it going to be considered tashmishi kedusha. So, right? Okay, so that's not going to solve too many problems for us. But anyways, that is an issue. Good. Okay, so now getting back to our story with regards to the aron itself. So what is an aron? Would I say that it's kedusha? No, it's not kedusha. There's no, an aron is just an aron, right? What is it? So at first glance, we'd probably say that it's tashmishi kedusha, right? It is there protecting the Sifrei Torah that are contained inside of it, right? So that's probably the case. That probably is how we qualify it. One could make a case, though, that it's only tashmish to tashmish kedusha. Why would I say that? Because the Torah doesn't go in there.
It's covered.
Right. Any time the Torah is in the Aron, it's always going to be covered. So really, the Tashmish Kedusha is really the Torah mantle, and the Aron, and then the Aron surrounding it, that's going to be considered Tashmish to Tashmish de Kedusha. So that's one thing to say about it. If it's Tashmish Tashmish Kedusha, so in theory, it could be thrown away. However. There's another aspect to Tashmish that's not just about is it directly surrounding it. It could be that there's another piece to it as well. The Rama writes in Reish Mem. No. That doesn't. I'm sorry. That's Rama. In my notes. Not Reish Mem Aleph, Rama. So the Rama writes in Kuf Nun Dalet Sif Hey, I believe. No, in Sif Vav, that I'm in the right spot here. No. Kuftan Dalet Sif Gimel, excuse me. So the Rama writes as follows. He says, V'dafka davar, he says, this applies to the thing. Kedusha be'atzmo, l'pami l'shanasu l'chavut. Right, V'dafka davar shemanichim behem davar ha-kedusha be'atzmo, l'pamim, o shanasu l'chavut. Meaning it was made to honor the thing. Could go in hamechasa shal hakrashim shal hasvarim. That, for instance, the cover that is used to protect the cover of the svarim. Aval osu mechasa shu lishmor oso mechasa shal hakrashim lo mikri tashmish davi tashmish tashmish. But if it's only to protect the outside of it, it's only to protect the cover, so then that would be considered tashmish to tashmish. And then the Rama adds in the lo mikri aron hakodesh elimu kimin arges. He said, we're only going to call it a aron if it's a cabinet, like if it's like a separate cabinet, she'eno asri rak l'kavod haTorah. If it's only used to honor the Torah, aval aron habanoi b'choma. But if you have an aron that is built into the wall, shenasa l'shmira lo mikre tashmishe kedusha. But if it is built into the wall and is really like a safe, so that's not going to be considered tashmishi kedusha, because that's not really glorifying the Torah itself. That's really to protect the Torah itself. So what's this Rama saying here? So if you have something built into the wall, some kind of closet, so that's going to be considered the only things that are considered tashmishi kedusha is if it is glorifying the kedusha. If it is only protecting the kedusha, so the Rama seems to say that would not be considered an issue. Now, what about an aron built into the wall here, like downstairs? The aron is built into the wall. So would that mean, okay, well, they don't have to worry about that anymore? So maybe yes, maybe no. Parts of it are there to protect the Torah, but parts of it is also there to glorify the Torah. So the parts that are glorifying the Torah perhaps probably have more of a reason to say is Tashmish Kedusha, as opposed to some that is not, which is only protecting the Torah, so one doesn't have to worry about that. And the Piskei Tshuvos here, he distinguishes between those different pieces. Some are to glorify, and some are to protect. Those that are only protection would not be considered Tashmish Kedusha. Those that are glorifying would be. But part of it probably would be. And for that reason, we assume that at least much of the Aron, certainly if it is a separate Aron, if it's a separate box that is being used, that's going to be considered unless maybe you could say like a safe. If it's a safe, so a safe is, even if it's separately used, maybe that wouldn't be considered Tashmish Kedusha. But in Aron, that's in shuls, that's not necessarily part of the wall, that's not part of the wall, that's probably considered Tashmish Kedusha. So hence that big Aron that was there and then was moved to Masifta, and I'm not sure where it is right now. So that would be considered considered Tashmish Kedusha, which would mean that it would be required to be buried. So is that it? Is there a way to, is there something else perhaps to be done? So there is a path. So Mishnah Berurah, later on, so the Mishnah Berurah in Kuf Nun Dalet Sif Lamed Aleph, see he, there it is, that he's going on the Ramah, where the Ramah says, Aser Lassus Mehem, it's, that things that were Tashmishi Kedusha, you're not allowed to go ahead and use it for lesser things. So the Mishnah Berurah says, so therefore, one isn't permitted, if you have the Aron is no longer going to be used, so what do you have to do? You have to put it into Geniza. So there is, he is in the Shar HaTzion, so the Shar HaTzion are the footnotes of the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah writes, usually the sources are not there. Instead, he has footnotes on the bottom called the Shar HaTzion, which he wrote as well. So it's always interesting to see if there's an additional source, right, that he doesn't want to pass on. Like sometimes it's in the Mishnah Berurah itself, and sometimes it's in the Shar HaTzion, right? So what is it? So in the Shar HaTzion, he quotes a Taz. The Taz is not no slouch. The Taz is on the side of the Shulchan Aruch in the standard edition of Shulchan Aruch. And the Taz says, when is it that you're not allowed to knock down the level of Kedusha? That's only when you have a choice, meaning I have this, and I want to knock it down to a lower level of Kedusha. But the Taz says, let's say the alternative is that I'm putting in the Geniza, meaning I have a brand new Aron Kodesh, and that's what we're going to use. Now I have this old Aron Kodesh, so I have a choice. I could break it down and bury it, put it in the ground and put it in the Geniza, or I can use it for another purpose that will still be a mitzvah purpose. So can I go ahead and do that? So the Taz said, yes. Right, better to use it for another Torah mitzvah purpose than to put it in the ground. The Mishnah Berurah says, no. Mishnah Berurah says, I disagree with the Taz. And he has a couple of proofs. One of the proofs is that the Gemara, that the Bigdei Kahuna that were used by the Kohen Gadol, so they were never going to be used again. Right, and they're put into Geniza. Right? So why couldn't you, if they're going to be put into Geniza, can't you use it for a lesser Kohen to use? So the fact that you couldn't maybe means that the Taz is wrong. There are a couple of other proofs that seem to go against this, but nevertheless the Taz says it, and Taz is defended. There are other people that come along and defend the Taz and say, no, if it's going to be thrown into the garbage anyways, so that, or not in garbage, put into Geniza, buried anyways, so then you can still go ahead and use it for other things. So that there is a minhag, and he quotes in the Piskei Tshuvos that apparently this was like a common thing, that maybe the Aron Kodesh is no longer going to be used for Torah itself, but maybe you can turn it into a bookshelf, right? So can I store Svarim in that? Is that okay? So the Mishnah Berurah would say no, and the Shar HaTzion, he quotes the Taz that would indicate yes, and the Mishnah Berurah says we disagree and we say no. But apparently that was minug this was used, or perhaps the wood was used for other mitzvah purposes, and therefore that would be permissible. So bottom line is yes, these Arons probably do have kedusha, they do have sanctity, and therefore if it's no longer going to be in use, it would need to be buried somehow, put into the ground. And there are those, however, that were makel, or I don't know if you want to call it a kula, and say, well, you don't have to bury it in the ground, you can use it for another mitzvah purpose, and that is left open to debate and still argued about Adi Yom Hazeh. Okay, I guess we'll stop here. Pinchas Eliyahu, good to see you. And Farah will continue.